Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
Senate Education Committee will come to order. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Internet listeners. Thank you for listening. Make sure you turn your cell phones off and any other electronic equipment. Secretary, may I call the roll, please?
Senator Gray? Here. Jurstead? Here. Nesselhoff?
Here.
Olson?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Newsom?
Here.
Karnos.
Here. We have quorum with a majority of the members-elect present. The chair will entertain a motion for approval of minutes.
I'll move.
It has been moved by Senator Knudsen, seconded by Senator Nesselhoff. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. The pages that are helping us today, Alyssa Van Meteren from Yankton, welcome, and also Megan Book from Wakanda. We are excited that you are here. A reminder, all testifiers to sign in and that handouts will be distributed by the pages. Make sure when you come up, identify yourself and who you are representing. Reminder that all questions must go through the chair. The agenda for today, we will start at the top of the agenda, House Bill 1241. Representative Sly or Senator Jurstead, are you guys ready to go? Sounds good. Then we'll drop down to House Bill 1282. With that being said, are there any proponents of House Bill 1241? And this is an act to provide for the delivery of special education or special education and related services to a child during the child's transition from one state school district to another. Good morning, Representative Sly. Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I am Representative Sly, and I'm going to share a little bit about this bill, and then there are some other proponents, too.
Okay.
So, actually, I have a copy
Let's hand that out right now. Do you have an amendment, too?
And I also have some information, too.
Right. Pages.
And I do have an amendment. Before we start, I'm going to go through some of the acronyms that are used in special education just so that we all are on the same page. And as we talk through this bill and as we talk about these things, we'll refer to an IEP, and that's an individual education plan. Sometimes we speak of IDEA, and that is Individual with Disabilities Education Act. Or sometimes FAPE is referred to, Free Appropriate Public Education. This bill is in regard to a student who moves from one school district within South Dakota to another school district in South Dakota. Possibly it can be a very short time, but it's during the transition time that this bill will address. And in the handout that you had, we're looking at the word comparable, and we're trying to make it so that we know for sure that the student that is on an IEP receives the services that they were receiving before they moved to this new school district. I will turn it over to the next proponent, and we'll go through it further, and he will explain it more.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Are there any further proponents of House Bill 1241? Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee.
Make sure you identify yourself and who you're representing. Thank you.
My name is John Hamilton. I'm the legal director of South Dakota Advocacy Services. It'll be 23 years in June that I've been in this position, and I've worked in the area of special education my entire career at South Dakota Advocacy Services. In my work, I've assisted parents, represented parents. I've spoken to numerous groups over the years. I've spent time reviewing administrative rules and commenting on those. So I have a lot of background in this area of the law. House Bill 1241, again, addresses a very specific situation, and it's just those students who are eligible for special education services who then move to another school district within the state. So, and one thing to keep in mind, too, is that this bill does not address those students who, at the time their parents move, are in a residential facility or in an out-of-district day program because those students are covered under another law in the state, and so that is not addressed in this bill. There's special rules under 1328.9.1 that address that situation. Okay, for a little bit of background, the Federal Office of Special Education Programs several years ago was asked questions regarding transfer students, asking for an opinion on what their rights are. And so way back in 1986, they were asked to comment, and actually what they do is put out federal policy that's then deemed binding on the country. But in Pennsylvania, where a student moved, the districts didn't have to follow that existing IEP. The school could unilaterally change it to state whatever they wanted. And if the parents didn't accept those changes, the child would then just be served in regular education. And the federal government said that that wasn't right, that during the pendency of proceedings, when a child is moving, that the new school district has to implement that existing IEP. The theory being that if a school district in the state has evaluated a child, created an IEP for that child, that the presumption is that they've done things correctly and that made a proper determination of what the child needs. And so the presumption then is that the new school district would follow that IEP until such time as it either formally meets to adopt it or formally meets to revise it and adopt a different IEP. So again, as Representative Sly was saying, we're talking about a small period of time here generally. I don't know how quickly the school may meet when a student transfers. It could be within a couple weeks, it could be a month, but that's the period of time that this bill addresses. The federal government, OSEP, again, in 1989, was asked a similar question. There was a policy in California where the school basically was allowed up to 30 days to develop a new IEP, and they didn't have to provide any special education services in the interim. And their response there was that states must ensure that the interstate transfer, and I'm going to put this in current terms, children with disabilities, does not result in any interruption of special education and related services. If a child with a disability moves to a new school district within the same state and the parents in the new school are unable to agree on an interim placement, the new school district must implement the old IEP to the extent possible until a new IEP is developed and implemented. To the extent that implementation of the old IEP is impossible, the new district must provide services that approximate as closely as possible the old IEP. So the federal government made a clear policy statement stating that the schools have to follow that existing IEP when a student moves. And then they, as they said, their final statement here that I quoted was, to the extent that implementation of the old IEP is impossible, the new district must provide services that approximate as closely as possible the old IEP. Okay, so then that takes us up to 2004, and at that point, Congress amended the IDEA and for the first time actually included within the law provisions on transfer students. And what they did was put a provision in there that says that schools must provide these students with comparable services. And until the new school either adopts the child's IEP from the previous school or develops, adopts, and implements a new IEP that meets the requirements of the law. So the issue here and the reason this bill came into being before you is that word comparable, which is not defined. Now, even if given its plain meaning of you know, similar or equivalent, the problem with it is that it's a subjective term, and it opens the door for abuse. And so instead of requiring these receiving school districts to provide services unless the district finds it impossible to do so. The term opens the door to allow a district to, you know, essentially do what it wants to do in terms of comparable services. So I've got a few examples here of what I mean. These are all hypothetical. So, and I use physical therapy just because this is an easy one to, you know, it's an easy example. So say a child has an IEP requiring physical therapy 3 times a week for 30 minutes a session and then moves. The receiving school district may have only one session available within the district without having to contract with an outside provider. So rather than provide the 3 sessions required in the IEP, the receiving district provides just the 1 session it has currently available and claims that to be comparable. Or say same child has an IEP with physical therapy 3 times a week, 30 minutes a session, and the receiving school doesn't have any available within the district and would have to contract with an outside provider. But instead of doing that, the receiving school has unsupervised aides or teachers work on the child's physical therapy goals, claiming that to be comparable. Or maybe, again, same hypothetical, but the receiving school district chooses to provide the child with 20-minute sessions instead of 30-minute sessions, again, claiming that to be comparable. You know, and the examples could just are endless, but a couple more that I had put down here. Suppose that an IEP requires counseling by a licensed psychologist and on a weekly basis. And instead of providing that, the new school district simply makes the school counselor available, claiming that to be comparable. You know, and it goes beyond related services. For example, an existing IEP may require certain educational services or that they be provided in a certain type of setting. A receiving school could claim that different educational services or a different setting is comparable, not because the receiving school cannot provide those services, but simply because it chooses not to due to inconvenience. Now, with this language, comparable, the current law does not require the receiving school to actually provide any of the services that are contained in that IEP, as long as it's something that's comparable. So nothing in the there's no requirement that they have to follow it. They just have to provide something comparable, whatever the district determines that to be. So, you know, I'm sure that your question is, well, does this actually occur? Don't schools, you know, don't all the schools in the state, you know, follow the letter of the law? Well, you know, I would hope that they would. My experience in history, you know, dictates that that isn't the case. There are always various issues in the area of special education just because schools have budgets, parents want services, they don't always agree. So when you have a subjective term like comparable, it's too easy for districts to take the road of least resistance, meaning not changing schedules, not rearranging staffing, not contracting for additional services, or otherwise providing something that existing IEP actually requires. So now, one thing that you may note is that you've been handed a copy of what's currently in the administrative rules and in the federal law. While it says in there that the districts must provide the comparable services in consultation with the parents, the reality is even if the school meets with the parents, the school is going to do what it wants to do. They're going to decide, well, this is what we're going to provide your child during this interim period of time, you know, until we meet to develop, review that IEP and either adopt it or develop a new one. Couple other things. Now, one other thing first. Now, yes, parents sure always have the right under the due process procedures within IDEA to challenge school decisions. The school provided services that parents felt were not comparable, they could certainly file for a due process hearing. But that shouldn't be necessary for these children. Parents shouldn't have to go to the trouble of bringing an administrative hearing. They shouldn't have to be legal experts to ensure that there's no interruption in the services to which their child deserves and is entitled. And those are the services that are in that existing IEP. Now, right now, on the House floor, this bill was amended, and what occurred there is the words "to the extent possible" were put into the bill. So my concern with that is similar to the word "comparable." To the extent possible opens the door to districts deciding, well, we don't think that that's really possible, whether it is or not. And it's another subjective term, and it goes against what I understand the intent of this legislation was, which was to ensure that there's no interruption in the services that have already been determined appropriate for a given child. Now, I understand that there's going to be a possible amendment or two before you today, and I don't know exactly how you addressed that.
At some point, we will add the amendment to it. I mean, if the amendment has been passed out, if you want to speak to the amendment, that is fine at this current time.
Has it been passed out?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
41 CB, correct?
You know, and I don't know if anyone else here has amendments, possible amendments as well. The amendment that's been handed out basically, what it does is on page 1911, it strikes "to the extent possible," which was the amendment which was placed on the bill on the House floor, and in its place substitutes "unless it is impossible." In terms of the, you know, both terms, both of those. Add a layer of subjectivity to it. Instead of just following it, now there's an out, now there's a, okay, unless it's impossible or to the extent possible. Of the two, I think "unless it is impossible," the amendment that you have before you is stronger language. If one were to have to choose between the two, I think that "unless it is impossible" would be a better term to use. I guess I had one other thought too, and then I'll yield here. Within the material that I was looking through in the policy letters, see, the question I had was, okay, so if this language is inserted into this bill, either language, the amendment from the House or this amendment, so then what happens if a school district claims that it isn't possible, that they, you know, then what? Then what do they have to do? It doesn't answer that question, if you're following what I'm saying. So in other words, if, say, there was a service in an IEP on a transfer student, and regardless of which language you're using, to the extent possible or unless it is impossible, you have a district that either truly couldn't provide a service or simply said it couldn't provide a service, then what? Is the school just off the hook for having to do that, or what happens? And that doesn't get answered with either of these amendments. And so I was looking at the language here, the last sentence in the second policy letter that I read. To the extent that implementation of the old IEP is impossible, the new district must provide services that approximate as closely as possible the old IEP. To me, that answers that question. That's not in either amendment, but maybe some language that the committee would want to consider. So,
thank you very much. Are there any further proponents of House Bill 1241? Any further proponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. members of the committee. I'm Robert Keene, and I work with South Dakota Advocacy Services. I really do appreciate the opportunity this morning just to add a couple points to the testimony you've heard up to this point. The clarification that's outlined in House Bill 1241 is allowed and is permissible by IDEA, Individuals with Disability Education Act. States are permitted to clarify the statutes of the state. They're also given permission to tailor applications of the law to fit a state's needs and interests. And this is even to the extent of creating what would perceive to be new rights. The early years of special education in South Dakota is a very good example of this. Even before Education Handicapped Act, EHA, the original special education law, South Dakota drove a standard that was 0 to 21. It was very progressive. South Dakota at that time uniquely understood the benefits of early intervention, and it also understood the loss of interrupted services. The concept underlying House Bill 1241 is going to reduce tension between the school districts and the parents, and most importantly, it builds a rapport, because you have a starting point when the student is introduced to the new school district. You have a beginning point. You have a completed document that will work, is in place, and is functioning. That will encourage the parents, because they participated in the development of that IEP that's coming into the new school district. Starting at that point and using that as the basis, the baseline, the beginning document, that will encourage parents to dialogue and communicate and collaborate. If the existing IEP is used, they're not going to feel threatened that the new district is going to rip it away and take it away and be vulnerable to the whole process once again. And seeing the school's efforts is certainly going to encourage the parents to collaborate with the school and work out mutual points of interest and resolve issues. I feel also that House Bill 1241 will potentially reduce costs to the school. There's already a functioning IEP that works. It fits the child's needs. It takes care of everything from A to Z. It will not require the receiving school district to go through extensive evaluations to try to, again, fit the child to the mold that they perceive the child should fit. I would also like to point out that House Bill 1241 is not many things. It is not, for example, an unfunded mandate. The level of services the child is to receive has already been determined, already established, already in place in the child's preceding school district. So this is not an unfunded mandate. It is also not an undue imposition to the school. While assisting the student to receive the very same services, again, it sets out a very clear starting point for that student. And it gives the school district that's receiving the student the encouragement to immediately determine whether that IEP is going to work in that environment or not work. And again, as I said earlier, it's going to immediately engage the parents into that conversation that will resolve the issues and, if be, generate another modified individualized education program. House Bill 1241 is needed to clarify IDEA as it's going to be applied in South Dakota. It's going to greatly assist a number of students in this state. Anecdotally, we do hear this does go on. Parents present the child. It's in September. School district says we only do evaluations in maybe November, but we have to evaluate the child. The child does not receive services for a period of time. These are the anecdotal information that we receive. So we need 1241 to clarify IDEA. It's going to greatly assist a number of students throughout the state, and I urge your support for this particular piece of legislation. Thank you very much for your time and certainly your attention, and I'll attempt to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents of House Bill 1241? Good morning, Representative Gosch.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Brian Gosch, Representative District 32. I'm going to be brief because I think the other proponents covered it all. I've been practicing law in this area for over 10 years and just wanted to throw my two cents in. I'm in favor of this bill. And the part I like about it is the consistency the child gets. When they have an IEP established and they went through that process, all the players were there, they got an appropriate IEP put together, then for reason of job transfer or whatever, they moved to another school district. For example, Stanley County School to the Pierre County or to the Pierre School District. For that time frame, until they get the chance to meet and get the new IEP written at the new school, they get that consistency. The work's already been done. They just get those pieces together, and they provide those services. And then if they keep the same level of services, fine. If they change it, if the team agrees to change it, fine. But in that meantime, the child is what we're concerned with, that, you know, they get that consistency of services throughout that process. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents of House Bill 1241? Any further proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1241? Are there any opponents? Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, my name is Dennis Champ, and I am the Director of Special Education for Peer Public Schools. I'm also a lobbyist for SASD, and I'm a member of the Council of Administrators for Special Education. I'd like to share with you what happens if Stanley County student comes to Peer on a current IEP. We serve that child on that IEP. And we serve that child on that IEP until the Peer District IEP team can meet and address the provisions of that IEP. You know, the House Bill 1241, there's really nothing wrong with it other than the fact the South Dakota administrative rule, and I have a comparison of this. Currently, South Dakota administrative rule is very clear about our obligation as a school district to a student transferring into the Peer Public Schools. And after you get a chance to look at that, I would like to know one area in that South Dakota administrative rule. In consultation with the parents, shall provide FAPE to the student. FAPE, free appropriate public education. It doesn't say you may provide FAPE. It says you shall provide FAPE. The Nevada courts ruled on comparability yesterday for the state of Nevada. Little difference because they had a student moving from a state into Nevada. They stated that comparability does not mean services exactly the same, but that the intent of the IEP is maintained and FAPE is maintained. South Dakota administrative rule already does that. You know, the federal regulations were passed in 2006. Our Department of Education, State Department of Education, then passes administrative rule to meet the requirements of the federal regulations. These administrative rules were passed in the fall of 2007. So we already have everything that we need in place to provide a student coming into our district or any district in the state from another district. And those services will continue according to the current IEP. To me, this really isn't a legislative issue, it's a compliance issue. If districts, and I have no knowledge of that, if districts are not complying with current South Dakota administrative rule or federal regulation, then due process may be a step that parents need to take. Parents are a part, a very, very important part of the IEP team. I'll make one final comment. In the Peer School District, a new student comes in on a current IEP, we serve that student on that IEP. We have a reasonable amount of time to address the IEP. In our district, we try and do that within 10 school days after receiving the records of the child. At that point in time, we hold an IEP meeting, and our obligation is to accept the current IEP as written, to modify that IEP, or to rewrite the IEP. We very seldom, in the 6-7 years I've been in Peer, we very seldom, in fact, I can't think of a time that we rewrote an IEP that a child brought to us from another district. There may have been modifications, but we simply don't rewrite them, or very seldom, if ever, rewrite them. So I guess to sum this up, you know, House Bill 1241, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's already in South Dakota administrative rule, and it is already in federal legislation, and the mandates are there. It's not a legislative issue, in my opinion. It's a compliance issue, and I'm not sure House Bill 1241 will ensure that a compliance any more than South Dakota administrative rule or federal regulation does. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further opponents to House Bill 1241? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dick Thiessen. I appear as an opponent today of House Bill 1241 on behalf of the Sioux Falls School District. I would disagree a little bit with the previous opponent in that he suggests there's nothing really wrong with House Bill 1241. I think there is something wrong with 1241 in that it will change, I believe, the dynamics of what takes place. The Sioux Falls School District is concerned about the bill because I think, in effect, it attempts to destroy the comparable services test and replace it with a test that would suggest that it must be impossible in order for you to not provide precisely the same services. As I listened to the proponents today, and let me say, all of what they're trying to do is well-intended. I'm concerned, I think, about the result of what happens here. Certainly, I'm not questioning their intentions as being well-founded and well-meaning. But I believe that the result is going to be something we won't like and is not very workable. The comments I heard today were that this bill is here so that we can ensure that the child is receiving the same services. The word same services was used. We're using terms such as the amendment suggests that you must provide the services that they were receiving unless it is impossible. Those are all very difficult words. They're words we like to use, but they're words that make reality very difficult, if not, and not being trite, but if not impossible. Because they suggest to me that what we will create is the situation where a parent will demand that the new location, the new school district, must provide precisely the same services that the child was receiving in another location. If I might digress for a moment to make my point, imagine that this were the rule we applied here in the State House, and that you were obligated to provide me precisely the same services in delivering my testimony to you as I am provided in other locations in this Capitol building. I could demand that I have the same facilities that are available in room 414. Now, we would all agree, I think, that this room ain't 414, okay? And that the services that are provided in that room are comparable. This room is comparable to what we have in 414, but it is not the same. So now the question becomes, are you obligated to provide the same services in this room that you are providing in 414? And what is the test for that? Where is the line that demarks what you're supposed to do in order to provide me with exactly the same services I receive in that room? I think my example is kind of illustrative of what we will see if you make this change. The administrative rule you were given includes the conversation of services comparable. The IDEIA suggests comparable. I suggest to you there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that because there are many times where, let's say, a child's receiving, I'll use their example, 2 times a week, 20 minutes. Well, is 1 time a week at 40 minutes comparable? If it's PT, probably not. Physical therapy is something that needs to be repeated, not once a week, twice a week. However, other services can be delivered in different methods, with different time periods, and at different places. I think that the removal of the test of comparable will create an environment that is controversial. With due deference to my good friend Bob Keane, I think that it will create tension as opposed to relaxing it. And the reason is that I suspect it will make people believe they have the right to demand that you will provide exactly the same thing that I received in room 414, and that if you don't, you're violating the law. Now, I would not sit here and suggest to any of you folks, and you all know, I'm surely not an expert in the area of special education. But in my other life, what I do for a living is defend schools and teachers. And I am not aware that there has been some significant issue in this area. If somebody wants to correct me in that statement, I'll surely be open-minded. But in the years I've been here, I think that one of the first things we always ask when we see a bill is, why is this here? And what problem is there going on out there in our state that we're trying to fix? And lastly, does this bill really fix it? I suggest to you that I'm not sure there's some outrage or some significant problem occurring out there, in that our school districts are somehow not providing comparable services. I don't know that there's a problem out there, that our school districts are not doing their very best to provide the same services to the extent possible that the child was receiving at the previous district, but that they are providing comparable services wherever they can. I'm also not aware of any lack of familiarity with the plaintiff bar in this state in finding their way into the court system if they feel that a school district has not been doing that. I think the testimony you had here earlier today was very good, in that it is clear that the school district is required to provide for the free and public education of the student, including services that are comparable. They do that. They may not delay in providing that services. And if they do, they certainly are subject to our legal remedies. So I think that while the bill is well-intended, I think that what we have works quite well. I believe that the IDEA was fairly well thought out when it used comparable services. And I wonder whether we should be rethinking that and changing that terminology, because I think comparable services works quite well. Unless you are shown that we have some great deficit out there, I would leave things alone, and we would encourage you to oppose 1241.
Thank you. Are there any further opponents of House Bill 1241? Any further opponents? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, thank you for the opportunity to provide input today. My name is Michelle Powers. I'm the Director of Special Education for the Brookings School District. I'm also the current president of South Dakota CASE, which is the Council of Administrators of Special Education. You've heard a lot of testimony today, and I don't want to be repetitive. I would support the comments that you've just heard from our previous speakers in opposition to this particular bill. I'd just like to give you some perspective from my school district. You know, first of all, I view this as an unneeded expansion, and I know that is repetitive, but I do believe it goes beyond our current state administrative rules and the federal law. Our role is clear. When a student moves into a district, we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to provide FAPE. We don't get to say, you'll have to sit and wait in some sort of a holding pattern until our magical timelines match up. We need to go from the first day. And that's our job. School districts have that responsibility. It's in the law currently. House Bill 21 goes beyond and truly muddies the water. And I think sets up a level of expectation that really begs to be defined through the courts. If I look at their current amendment, it says, I think, unless it is impossible. Aren't we familiar with the phrase, nothing is impossible? for perspective, in my school district, each year we have 25 to 50 students who move into our district new to one building. That's just sort of a scope. I oversee five buildings, three elementaries, one middle school, and one high school. So if you do the math, that means I have approximately 250 new students in our school district who we've never had before. If you take those 250 students and you take the state percentage, about 14-15% of those students, you're talking about 40 students on day one who are brand new to my school district on IEPs. They came from 40 different school districts with 40 different systems, with 40 different sets of service deliveries, and 40 different sets of staffing patterns. My job is still the same, to ensure FAPE, but my job needs the ability to provide comparable services. If I'm going to be able to work with those students successfully, I have to be able to work in a comparable manner as the current law allows. I want you to know that it is my privilege, my honor, to be an educator for these students. And I really hope that you will continue to allow me to do my job with the tools that I currently have to serve those students in the best manner I possibly can. Please leave the current laws as they are and vote against this bill. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much. Are there any further opponents of House Bill 1241? Any further opponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Deb Barnett with the Department of Education. And originally this morning with the bill before you containing the amendment that was passed on the House, we were a little uncertain as to whether we would comment, but hearing again another proposed amendment, we feel compelled to. As you've heard from numerous people, this situation is well addressed in our existing administrative rules as well as the federal IDEA. Comparable is comparable, means similar or equivalent to. In listening to the testimony, and we're still a little puzzled as to, you know, what exactly the perceived problem is that this bill is intended to fix. We start with the existing language of comparable or comparable. We heard testimony that no, really, it should be exact implementation to an amendment of to the extent possible. Now another proposed language change to unless it's impossible. You know, this language and wordsmithing is you know, just moving here and there and everywhere. Mr. Teason asked, you know, to what extent is this an issue? We have 14,000 plus students with disabilities receiving special education and related services in our state. And while it's not a perfect world and there are issues that come up occasionally, 99.9% of the time the IEPs are implemented. There's good communication between the families and school district personnel. Services are delivered. We maintain on our website a log of complaint investigations and due process hearings. The other day I went through our complaint log and our due process log over the last couple of years, and I'm not able to find an issue in our complaint system or due process system at all. So while we may hear of anecdotal information, I can't find any quantifiable information that we maintain. I think at the end of the day, use the plain meaning of the word comparable. I also believe that special education directors and teachers and building principals and others, educators, they're there to do the best possible job they can for all students and for students with disabilities. They act in good faith. They will do the right thing. We live in a really mobile society. People are used to families moving in and out of the district. It's not anything new. Folks know what to do. Just let them do their job. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further opponents of House Bill 1241? Any further opponents? Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Hutmaker, registered lobbyist for South Dakota Coalition of Schools and South Dakota Midsize Schools. I'm not going to try to impress you that I'm a special ed expert, but our school districts are opposed to this bill as well, and I think there's been expert testimony from people that are in the field, and we would go along with their conclusions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponents of House Bill 1241? Any further opponents? Seeing none, any questions from the committee of proponents or opponents at the current time? Senator Gray?
If I could, Michelle Powers, please.
Make sure you identify yourself again. Sure. Thanks, Michelle.
Michelle Powers, Brookings Schools.
Good morning, Michelle. Is it president of CASE, is that right?
That's right.
My question has to do with, how certain school districts might handle the situation. Obviously, if you're going from Fort Pierre to Pierre, Pierre's capable. If you're going to Pierre to Brookings, but what if you're going, say, from Brookings to Lyman County or to Isabel or to Faith, mm-hmm. the small school mm-hmm. district?
And the responsibility is still the same. The responsibility is written right into the law. It's must provide FAPE, shall provide FAPE. Both federal law and state law say that's the case. School districts don't have carte blanche to just decide when they're going to start or what they're going to do. It needs to be provided in accordance with the IEP. And, you know, comparable is, I think, to me, obvious. If you look at two things and they look very, very similar, you've got something that's comparable. Obviously the challenge is they don't have the same service providers. They don't have the same frequency of people in their community. But that is still the job of the school district to figure that out. If that means they have to work with their local medical provider to contract for some therapy services that they currently don't have in the amount that's required, then they need to do that. If they need to be flexible with scheduling and adapt so that students get certain services that maybe the configuration of the system they're in now isn't quite cohesive with, then they need to do that. Schools need to be following what the IEP says. They don't have, I think as was previously portrayed, the ability to just sit back and let a student wait.
So one follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So you would agree that this is probably not a legislative issue but a compliance issue?
Yes, I would. And I'm not sure to what degree of a compliance issue. I recognize that South Dakota Advocacy, who you heard from today, that is their role and function in the state is to be responsive to families who are experiencing difficulties. But, I think it's very telling when you see it has not risen to the level of a state process that, matters that are happening are not probably in abundance. I'm sure things are happening. I wouldn't doubt that families have been disappointed. But, again, it goes back to, is the district following the law? I don't think you need to put more law on top of a law that already sets an acceptable standard.
Senator Olson, then Senator Peterson.
I have another question for Mrs. Powers while you're here. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of any school districts that aren't providing this service where a transfer happens where an IEP student is transferred into another district and the school district may sit on it for lack of professional services available or where there's an extended amount of time where they don't address restarting the student on an IEP at the new school district?
I'm personally not aware of any of those situations. I haven't had any directors call me up and say, I had this kid move in and I've been letting him sit for 3 weeks. That's not the kind of thing that I would typically hear about. I imagine there are students who move in who perhaps have a complicated service setup that districts have to work a bit to make get into place. But if that were the case, if they came into my district and they needed some service and I wasn't able to provide it for a certain period of time, I would provide them with compensatory services to make up for the time that they missed. And I believe that would be the case in any district.
Follow-up.
Isn't that where the language in line 11, to the extent possible, which was amended, I believe, on the House floor.
Right.
To the extent possible, that's pretty broad. Wouldn't
it's,
the school
it's broad,
district
yeah,
be
yeah.
able to work within those parameters?
I believe I communicated with all the members here today and said that with the amendment, we find it less objectionable. It still isn't, I think, a needed piece of legislation, but if you're going to have it, that piece is better than what's been proposed by the proponents today.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Michelle, if mm-hmm. I may. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to prevent, to follow up on Senator Gray's question about when a student with special needs goes to a small school. There's nothing to prevent that small school from joining with a larger school to provide those needs. I think this actually occurs, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I get calls from neighboring communities. A child needs a particular piece of assistive technology that they don't happen to possess. I happen to have a few more resources, and if I'm not using it, I can loan it out to them. Sometimes, you know, I've had students that need a therapy service, and their family transports them every day, and so I've worked out a tuition agreement with a neighboring school. There's a lot of ways that we help one another that doesn't always get talked about.
Senator Nesselhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll just keep Michelle in the hot seat for a little bit here.
That's fine.
Could you just walk me through an IEP? How would that change regardless of whether or not a student was new? I mean, if you had an IEP, do you review that annually?
Sure.
Some point you say, okay, these are changes that
okay.
need to be made?
Well, IEPs are written to last for 1 year's time. That's why you have an annual IEP meeting. You can have meetings more frequently than once a year if you need to. And a child moving into a district is a good example of when you would need to meet, because obviously my receiving district, we didn't write the IEP, we don't know the child, we don't know the family, we need to have a conversation about what's occurred in the prior district and how we can ensure that the services are continued and we continue to make growth. The IEP team is comprised of the parent, the school district administrator like myself or a principal, a special education teacher, a general education teacher, and then related service providers if that student has services like occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy.
Any further questions from the committee of the proponents or opponents? Any further questions? Anyone? Thank you very much. Representative or Senator Gray, you have a question? Oh, somebody different? Sure. Yes, go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Keene.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just want to give you an opportunity to cite a specific example or two to the committee of where maybe a school district isn't providing comparable services.
It's never been our practice to pit school districts, and I've been asked innumerable times, tell me about the good districts and the bad districts, and we as an agency have never gone down that road for obvious reasons. However, as I tried to point out in my testimony, we have heard anecdotally from parents, and oftentimes the question about how soon the services were incorporated, how soon the services were delivered, are part of a bigger issue, but that is one component part of the dialogue they're involved with the school district. It may be we don't provide that particular service in this school district. So the time element on addressing it is a part of a larger complaint, if you will. We do hear, again, anecdotally that the comment is made. We evaluate periodically. We don't evaluate immediately. We also hear that we have a contract. We can't really get that student in at this particular point in time. We'll work on it and try to do a different contractual arrangement. That tend to stall out, and services then aren't implemented, aren't delivered in a timely manner. Again, we work very closely with the department. We work very closely with the special ed directors. We work very closely with school districts. I think part of the issue, too, is you don't hear it so much because we're in there trying to resolve these issues. And it doesn't go to complaint. As Deputy Secretary Barnett said very appropriately, there's 15,000 of IEPs in the state. The vast, vast majority go very well. People are very dedicated. The people that spoke against the bill are very dedicated in their work, genuinely interested in providing quality services. However, there are the exceptions, and that's what this bill will address. It's a starting point for the dialogue with the parent.
Any further? Senator Knudsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Mr. Keene.
Yes.
Dick Thiessen characterized this bill as changing the standard from comparability to identity, identical. Do you think that's, in essence, what the bill does?
It could be. I don't think it does that. I think what it does is create a beginning point. It creates a standard, what the school should be looked towards doing. I think it does focus it a little bit more upon the elements of the IEP. I think it's a discussion point whether that does create a more critical, finite litmus. But I think that my perspective has always been when you drive that new language as being proposed in the amendment, it will draw the attention of the school district much sooner into analyzing that IEP.
Any further questions? Committee, any further questions for anyone? If not, Representative Sly, if you want a minute for closing comments on your end, that is more than appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, committee, I think the point has been very well made that this isn't something that's happening all of the time, and I believe that the people that were the opponents are people that are following the law, and I think the intent is for the situations where it has not been followed, and I believe that's what this is targeted to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee, we do have an amendment. Let's move on that. Up or down on that, 1241 CB. Any comments on the amendment? And again, if you look at line 11 of the bill, after shall, it would put in unless it is impossible, follow, and then you delete to the extent possible. Is there a motion on the amendment? Okay, there is no motion on the amendment. Therefore, the amendment, having no motion, it dies. The chair closes the public hearing on House Bill 1241 in its current unamended form on the Senate side, open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Knudsen.
Mr. Chairman, well, I think the testimony ultimately convinced me that this is not needed, and I'm going to move that we defer it to the 41st day.
There has been a motion before us to move House Bill 1241 to the 41st legislative day. Any comment on that? Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name appears on the bill as a co-sponsor, and I certainly respect Representative Sly and her teaching background and her concern for students. I think that's what all of us are in favor, is concern for students and that all students be treated fairly and with respect and certainly accommodated in terms of their needs as well as possible. Listening to the testimony this morning, I think, you know, it was a very good discussion to have, very good for all of the awareness for what goes on. I hope people are listening all over the state. And I do think that folks are taking care of these children in the best way possible, and perhaps there are places where a slip-up occurs here and there. But it appears to me that this legislation is probably not needed and might be misconstrued a little bit if it were continued on and passed. And so I'm going to vote in favor of the 41st day here, even though my name is on the bill. In light of all the testimony and in light of further consideration. But I want to thank Representative Sly for bringing this bill and for the discussion that we have had and for her concern for students, especially in the field of special education.
Senator Olson.
My name isn't on the bill, and I'm going to urge you to not vote for the 41st day. I feel some compulsion here to vote in favor of the bill. I think that the bill has pretty broad latitude. I think the language that states to the extent possible, to me that seems very broad. It seems like it's a platform where school districts should be able to operate in some capacity to accommodate these IEPs as they transfer in. No one that testified as a proponent or opponent says that they're not going to continue to do IEPs or to reassess the child's needs. This just says that to the extent possible, that new school district has to make accommodations, and I really don't think that that's that big of an ask in this case. So I'm going to vote no on the 41st day.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I fail to see any difference between the extent possible and comparable, and therefore I see no need for this bill right now.
Any further discussion from the committee? Committee, you have before you the motion to move to the 41st legislative day. Seeing no more discussion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gray?
Aye.
Jurstedt?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
No.
Olson?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Reynolds?
Aye. House Bill 1241, having received a majority vote of the members, it goes to the 41st legislative day. Thank you very much, Representative Sly. We appreciate all everyone coming in and testifying. That moves us on to House Bill 1282. This is an act to allow counties to assign the responsibility for the redemption of bonded indebtedness of a former school district to a new school district after a reorganization. Are there any proponents to House Bill 1282? Good morning, Representative Feichert. Good to have you over here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members of the committee, my name is Dennis Feichert. I'm representative from District 3, and I think my bill is dead. Anyway,
well, we can't get to that.
For explanation, it was brought to my attention that in the Groton School District, who consolidated with the Bristol School District, that there was an issue of having the school district to continue the administration of their bonded indebtedness. And there is a law on the books that says that the school district must turn their administration of the bonds over to the county. Well, I think probably most of you have gotten email information from Todd Meyer Henry, and I'll have
the page. One of the pages, hand that out for us.
Yeah. Okay. And it refers to another law, which is 6-8B-16, that allows for this to take place, the situation that Groton School District was in. I think that one of the concerns that I guess I have in all of this is that there are currently 8 school districts that have complied with 3-6-82, and I guess my concern is that I wonder if it's possible by resolution if those school districts would have known that this other law is actually allows for this particular process to take place, if that might have happened, and maybe that's something that either the Department of Education or legislative audit can probably work with those school districts. And I think that I know that at the current time the Groton School District is in the process with the county. The county is actually, Brown County is already working with Groton School District to comply with the previous law, and now this law has been brought to our attention. So I guess with that, I'll stand by and look forward to questions.
Thank you for the explanation. Are there any further proponents of House Bill 1282? Any further proponents? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1282? Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Thiessen on behalf of the Sioux Falls School District. I'm not sure if I need to get up. I gave the representative a copy of this statute. The problem with the bill is that it, as I understand it, and I'm not a bondsman or bond counsel, but I've had conversations with bond counsel about the difficulties in the bill, is that because it provided for the transfer of the authority to someone else, it created the situation where the district would maybe not be able to reissue the bonds at a lower interest rate on some date later, and thereby deprive them of the opportunity to take advantage of a lower interest rate. And the existing law in 6-8B-16, of course, already allows a mechanism to do what House Bill 1282 attempts to do without the risk of affecting their ability to reissue the bonds.
Thank you very much. Are there any further opponents of House Bill 1282? Any further opponents? Questions from the committee of proponents or opponents? Any questions? I don't think we need any rebuttal time, do we, at this current time? Okay. Chair closes the public hearing on House Bill 1282. It's open for committee discussion and or action.
Table.
Senator Gray has made a motion to table. It has been seconded by Senator Knutson. A tabling motion is non-debatable. Secretary will call the roll on the tabling motion for House Bill 1282.
Senator Gray? Gerstad?
Aye.
Hasselhoff?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Garnos?
Aye. Having received a majority vote of the members elect, House Bill 1282 has been tabled. Thank you very much for the people that came in and testified today. Reminder from the chair, make sure that you leave your binders. And do we have a motion to adjourn? It has been moved by Senator Gerstad, seconded by Senator Olson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.